This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light and the Seattle Seahawks. They have themselves a new backup quarterback. It's always weird to scrutinize the addition of a player you hope never sees the field. But I also think it's one of the more interesting decisions that teams will make because you get to see a plan. And a year after going and getting a reliable backup in Brett Hundley, well, now they've gone and signed at least to give a chance to Paxton Lynch at seeing if he can sort of resurrect what was a really promising career when he was a first-round pick.
You know, I think mentally, emotionally, all that, I don't want to be too dramatic, but backup quarterback's the toughest position to play in the NFL as far as that goes. And, it, you know, as far as skill and everything, quarterback is by far the toughest. And then I think corner, playing out on the corner, especially now with the rules, it's incredibly difficult. But backup quarterback, man, you have to be ready, unless you're Billy Joe Hobert. You guys remember that?
I do remember
came
that.
Came in as a backup, and he's like, yeah, I didn't really pay attention this week. And I'm like, yeah, you might not have said that, though.
Didn't know the plays.
Yeah, he said he didn't really know the plays. I met Billy Joe Hobert when he was a rookie, and I went to some NFL thing, and there was a bunch of rookies coming in, and I was there. And I think I was the only veteran, and they were a bunch, you know, it was like some kind of an NFL promo thing. And Billy Joe Hobert was the only one I could stand. Not all of them, but most of them were a bunch of cocky punks. I remember I chewed out one of the kids because he was saying something. I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about, son. You know, something like, I was probably in my sixth or seventh year or whatever. And I really liked Billy Joe Hobert.
What did that rookie do to it?
I can't say, but he used a word that you shouldn't use, and I admonished him on it pretty harshly. And so, yeah, it was, and, you know, that's not how to act and stuff like that, and who are you? And he didn't really say that, but he kind of looked at me that way, and I just remember him. My wife brought that story up to me last night, as a matter of fact. But, you know.
That's Billy, awesome, Dave.
Did Billy Joe, did he drive there in the Camaro or whatever it was?
I don't think so.
Not funny.
I think it was down in Arizona.
Not funny, Jim.
Yeah. So, but yeah, and I liked Billy Joe. I thought he was really cool, and he was the one guy that didn't act like an idiot, like he knew what he was doing. I really liked Billy Joe Hobert. So I hate to, you know, bring this up, but he did say after he got into a game that he wasn't ready for it. And that's what is so hard about it, is that you have to prepare just as hard as the starting quarterback, you know. And, you know, if you don't, then something like that can happen. So it's just a tough job. You have to be really disciplined. And I have to say, you know, and this could be just a rumor. Again, I'll give him a break if he's playing Madden. But if the kid is playing video games and he's played more video games than watched film, you know, I mean, I don't. He's probably bored as hell. I'll tell you this. When I was a rookie, and that was really the 1 year I didn't start, one of my teammates caught me doing a crossword puzzle in a meeting. But, you know, I wasn't playing, and I wasn't active and everything. But, yeah, I was sitting there doing the crossword puzzle while they put the defense in because I was like, yeah, they got Bosworth, and I was not getting activated, and, you know, which is probably really stupid of me. But, you know, there was – two or three guys ahead of me, and it wasn't like I was going to get on the field. So, yeah, you have to be mature about that, and you have to, you know, pay attention. And as I went forward, of course, you know, when I was injured and wasn't playing, I still was, you know, writing notes and paying attention and everything. So it's just it's a position where you have to be really a disciplined person.
Can I raise my hand and say that's a weird request, that I hope it was a case of him not paying attention and playing too many video games? Because that's like the all-time most fixable thing for a professional athlete.
True.
Like, if it was a matter of him playing video games, and I have real suspicions that it's a case of taking an observed result, which was he didn't pan out as a quarterback, and then working backward to find reasons why it didn't work out. And even if he did play a ton of video games, there are a ton of guys that play a ton of video games who are really good football players.
That's true.
And that behavior, when the player's really good, this is just one of the things that he does to distract himself. Isn't it cool that he's awesome at Gears of War as well? It becomes this sort of personality profile. And when the player stinks, the exact same video game pattern could be, well, his priorities are in the wrong place. And if he just tried.
Yeah.
That said, if it was a matter of his work ethic, that's one of the easiest things for someone to fix.
Yeah, I suppose. But, Dave, you know John Elway. And for him to give up on a first-round choice 2 years after making it, that says a lot.
Yeah, you know, I think about John and how I guess you would think that he would be able to pick a quarterback, right? I think one of the reasons why John Elway doesn't coach is because he's one of those guys that it just came easy to him and he couldn't really explain it. You know, I think the really good players, they don't become coaches because, or they're maybe not good coaches because, you know, that's why you see backup quarterbacks as coaches. You know, like if you try to explain Elway, what did he do? I don't think he could explain it. I think most of the stuff he did was instinct and just natural athletic ability. So, but yeah, you would think that he would know the formula of the quarterback, but he knows how to build a Super Bowl champion. We know that. You know, the way he did it was not through offense, it was through defense. You know, the year I remember talking to him and hearing from other people that after he got whooped in that Super Bowl by the Seahawks, that he was so angry and was, you know, going old school. Like, this is, you know, we need to get old school type of players in here and tough guys and play defense. So I'll never forget. We went back and played. We played the Raiders. Remember I told you that we were 9-7. We played the Raiders and lost, and then we had to go back there the next week and play. And I remember he put up a number of points in that game, and I just remember at halftime he's looking over at the defense and yelling, like, can you just stop them one time? Just stop them, like pleading with us. And I just remember going, we just can't. We couldn't do it. You know, and a lot of it was because – I just thought the calls that we were in were ridiculous. We were in cover two. Somebody was talking about earlier that you can only use as a mixer, and they just ran three verticals on us every time, and I would be running down the middle of the field with a guy named James Jett or somebody like that. So, but I just remember him just pleading with the defense, and I always felt guilty about that we couldn't give him, you know, enough. We couldn't stop him enough times for him to put points up on the board, which he did. You know, and that was probably one of the best years. And Jim Fossil was his offensive coordinator, and it was just clicking for him, and everything was great offensively. But, you know, so John, I think there's a lot of pressure on him there because he's the – think about what he means to Denver. I mean, when he came there as a quarterback and winning a couple Super Bowls, being the MVP, was he a couple of times? And I don't know if he was two-time Super Bowl MVP, but – you know, when they beat the Packers that year, Jim, that first one that they won, that was the one where he got helicoptered with that hit.
Right.
I think they were like 14-point underdogs in that game.
They were significant underdogs,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, so...
it's cool the way he went out on top, though.
Yeah, and he retired after that last win. And then, you know, he becomes the GM and he builds, like I said, into a Super Bowl team after getting whooped. So he means a lot to that city. But I just... It's weird as far as not being able to find the quarterback that you would think he's looking for the next him. But, you know, I don't know where you go and find that guy. And he's tried it a lot of different ways. I didn't disagree with him with the Case Keenum thing. But it'd be interesting to hear, you know, as this whole thing starts to file out and we'll figure out, you know, what Paxton Lynch is about. We'll get a chance to meet him, whatever. It'll be interesting to see. And again, like I said in the open, I think that a lot of it is getting the right guys around you and the right coach. I mean, look at Jared Goff. I don't if Jeff Fisher stays down there and he doesn't have the right quarterback coach down there, do you think Jared Goff's any good?
Well, Jeff Fisher certainly hasn't gotten a sniff since then. No, I don't. I think that there was nothing that showed you that he was going to blossom under Fisher.
Yeah, I mean, he was a rookie, granted, but he was lost.
Yeah.
And he looked terrible.
And he also looked like he would just like, oh, I'm invisible. Nobody's going to hit me on the sideline here in CenturyLink Field. And wham!
That was as naive as the I don't know which side of the earth the sun comes up on.
Yeah. Lee Steinberg, we talked to Paxton Lynch's agent earlier today, and he talked about why Pete Carroll and the Seahawks are a good fit for his client.
And it's a great organization, so, you know, having Pete Carroll and being in that circumstance, I think Paxton was a first rounder. We thought he'd be a franchise quarterback. I think he still will be one day, but this is a good place for him to be.
It's a place for him to land and try and regroup. And look, the chances of him blossoming and becoming a good starting quarterback in the NFL again, I would say it's probably less than 20%. I wouldn't think it's more than that. He's had a go-round in Denver, a team that had invested a lot in him. but it's certainly worth a shot for the Seahawks. I'm excited to see how that goes. We thought we'd get to some other questions and start to lead this with an eye toward free agency, because we know some players that are going to come up. The 5 o'clock hour brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. Should the Seahawks pursue Golden Tate? He's going to be a receiver who is a free agent. He was traded by Detroit to Philadelphia, in part because the Lions saw the writing on the wall and probably weren't going to be interested in matching or retaining him, paying what it would take to keep him. Golden Tate is the one that got away. And he is the player, I think, more than any, even the trade of Max Unger, because that was more a decision. Seattle thought he was breaking down physically. Tate, the decision on Tate was really made because they had invested so much more in Percy Harvin because they thought Harvin was a more explosive football player. And that turned out to be true just in terms of his combustible personality. Should you try and bring him back now? What is it, 5 years removed from that Super Bowl season from having last played with the Seahawks?
Yeah, you know, he's only had 3 1,000-yard receiving years. So I feel like it's not like he's expecting to go somewhere where he can just tear it up. He is getting older. I can't believe he's 30. You know, and he's been in the league for, what, 9 years now. It just doesn't seem like that much time has gone by, but I loved him. I remember, when you think about, I compared David Moore to him. Remember, it took him a couple years to get going, because his first 2 years he had 227 yards and then 382 yards.
He was a healthy scratch his first game as a Seahawk. Healthy scratch in his first regular season game, was inactive for the game. He played in Denver the next week and did get there. It was only the end of his second season. This is, I think, the statute of limitations is off of this one. The turning point for Tate is actually because it was Tavares' year as the story's been told to me, they were playing cards on the way back from a game midway through Tate's second season. And Tavares was in the card game, and so was Tate. And at some point, it came down to the two of them, and Tavares made a comment such as, like, you better not beat me in this hand, or I'll never throw you the ball again. And Tate responded to something to the effect of, well, you never throw it to me anyway, so why would that be any different? And that led to...
Especially in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that led to a little bit more of an escalated. There was an ice pack and a towel that needed to be... There was some sort of interaction, physical interaction between the two. What came out of it was that their relationship became significantly better, and Golden Tate took a major step forward in the final month of that season. And that was kind of the launching pad. But you're right, Dave. It was about two seasons. It wasn't until his third season that he emerged as a really significant, consistent contributor.
Yeah, that's an interesting story I had not heard. And, you know, the thing is, and with David Moore, the parallel there is that David Moore actually was good, but there's a couple times where, you know, he didn't run the right routes and he was, you know, kind of sloppy and things like that. That was Golden Tate. But then, you know, in 2012, he kind of busted out for, you know, 7 touchdowns that year, 5 the next year, the year of the Super Bowl. And I just loved him. I can't say it enough. Any receiver that gets an unnecessary roughness penalty for blocking too hard is awesome. I'm sorry. You've got to have that.
The Sean Lee hit.
Yeah. The other thing, he returned punts too.
Yes,
right?
He did.
He's a great – I always thought that Golden Tate was meant to be a running back because, you know, he runs good routes and everything, but once he gets in the open field, he just makes great moves. He keeps his feet going. He's really good at running through contact. And so, yeah, I would love to have him back here. Now, he's not going to have some delusions of grandeur that he's going to come in here and catch 100 balls. You know, you know that we throw the ball here less than anybody in the league, and that's what they're going to want to get back to. So, yeah, it might be a nice little fit for the end of his career.
I would say this. I think the Seahawks would need to pay him more than anyone else to get him to come back. They would need to be the
He's not going to come
so?
Here.
You think he'd still be bitter?
I don't think it's bitter, but I don't think he's going to choose it over other options. I think you would have to make it the most financially valuable.
Well, I think there's a chance of getting him, perhaps, because when you think about him being, I was surprised too, Dave, that he's 30. So next year, I think he turns 31 in August or something like that. But still, you look at Golden Tate's still a productive receiver, 74 catches for 795 yards with Detroit and Philadelphia combined. And I think he'd be affordable at this point in his career. And maybe he would want to come back and play here and win a Super Bowl. And I just look at – I want to see the receivers get upgraded. I love the idea of Baldwin and Lockett. And then if you added Tate to that, you talk about David Moore. He could help David Moore with his progress and then release Jerron Brown and move on from him and get Tate in here.
Next question, should the Seahawks be aggressive in free agency, specifically at defensive end? The Seahawks, it's not like they've been inactive in free agency. They've definitely signed free agents. But they have not gone out and piled up the big money to get their choice number one and said, this is the best defensive end that it's on the market, and we're going to pay whatever it takes to get him. They have not done that. Is this the year for them to do that? They've got four draft picks. They'll probably trade down to get more of that, but that means you're moving further and further away from a top-shelf defensive end. They also have about $40 million in cap space. They're among the top third of the league, top fourth of the league when it comes to cap space. Is this the year to pile a big stack of money in front of someone?
If it's the right person, and I know that's a kind of a chicken bleep way out of answering that question, but I was trying to think, do you guys remember? I was really excited about Michael Bennett. Really excited because I liked him when he was here. He came here as, was he a fifth rounder?
He was an undrafted
free agent. He was an undrafted free agent, Texas A&M. And I remember in two of the preseason games, I made him my MVP because I thought he, just the way he played, there was something there. But then they cut him. And, you know, I was like, all right, well, maybe I was wrong, whatever. He went down to Tampa Bay. He was okay. But he showed some flashes of, especially from the inside of playing the run and rushing the passer and everything. So when he came here, I was really excited. I was not excited about Cliff Avril. And I remember hearing people saying that he was a problem in Detroit and everything. And that turned out to be 100% incorrect because I think Cliff is one of the great Seahawks that we've had in here. And so, yeah, I mean, there might be a signing of a free agent or two like that that you think that same way. So, yeah, I mean, look, how would you grade what they've gotten out of some of these guys? Because Barkevious Mingo is not a Pro Bowler or anything, but I loved him this year. I thought he was a great sign for the amount of money that they paid him. I think Deion Jordan was a great – Deion Jordan does a lot of things on the field that aren't very obvious and don't show up in the stat book. And so, yeah, I mean, those are two good pass rushers, decent, and one linebacker mostly, that they went out and got. So, absolutely, I think they should go into the market. I don't know if they should go after one of these top-tier guys and spend, you know, $15 million, but I think, yeah, probably they're going to have to do that. They need more pass rushers.
Yeah, well, you look at Clark and Reed being your two main guys, and I was just looking at this top 25 list of free agents to be that NFL.com put out today, and a good list of names where I think you could maybe get a guy at a reasonable price, a guy like Brandon Graham from Philadelphia, who's getting up there in age a little bit. He'd be 31 in April, 42 and a half sacks in his career. And the part I like, and you mentioned Cliff Avril, he was so good at forcing fumbles, and Brandon Graham has forced 16 fumbles in his career. So only four sacks this year, but 9.5 the year before. And just seems like, it seems to me like a defensive end pass rusher guy can still be productive into his early 30s.
He certainly can. That's one of the, and especially any sort of defensive, any guy that's an interior pass rusher, they maintain that productivity. Would you prioritize adding a defensive end over re-signing Frank Clark? Because I think that's what the one thing I come back to is that they probably should, if they're going to add a defensive end, a really high-profile one, you're not going to get a better pass rusher than Frank Clark. You're not going to get somebody who's better than Frank Clark.
So you're either going to extend Frank Clark and get a pass rusher in the draft, or
extend Frank
or
and look
franchise
for,
him. And
yeah, I don't think it's a great. Can you franchise Frank and still add a starting caliber defensive end? Because that's pretty expensive. That's probably the bulk of your salary cap space there if you were going to go out and try and sign Brandon Graham. I think I like the idea of extending Frank Clark and then bringing in and seeing what's left over after the first wave of free agency, which is kind of what Seattle's typically done. It's where they found Mingo. It's how they got Avril, is let the big money get spent first and then see what's left.
Well, maybe you got the guys on the roster anyway, because, Dave, you talked about Rasheem Green and how much you liked him, and we didn't see too much from him in the regular season, but Jacob Martin came on.
That's true. Martin did emerge, and that brings us to the next question was, is Puna Ford a potential star on this team? You were the one that pointed this out. My favorite website.
Yeah. Pro Football Focus. He was the highest rated defensive player, regardless of position, that was drafted in 2018. So you think about that. And Puna Ford, we didn't see a whole lot of him until the end of the season, and boy, he became a huge force for the Seahawks.
Say that again. He's the highest rated rookie.
He was undrafted.
Well, correct. he was undrafted, but of all the guys that were drafted, Puna Ford had a higher rating from Pro Football Focus than them all.
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
I had somebody from the Seahawks ask, hey, how's Puna Ford? He's a man of few words.
He is. He's not talkative.
It's remarkable that he was Defensive Player of the Year in the Big 12. It's just amazing that he doesn't get drafted. I wonder what he thought before the draft, if he knew that was going to happen. You can ask him, but I don't think he'll tell you because he doesn't have much to say. I really love that about him. I do. I don't care if whether he talks or not. I just think he's an awesome player. And he's an interesting-looking dude. Man, I mean, he has really long arms.
He's exceptionally long arms, and he's
very short.
If he's 6 feet tall, he's just 6 feet tall.
I'll tell you what, man. I used to think, I wish I was 6'4", 6'5". I'd look at, like, Dwayne Bickett, some of those linebackers in the NFL. And then once I watched Sam Mills play, who his nickname was the Field Mouse. He was an inside backer. The great Sam Mills, Hall of Famer, everything. He was 5'9", maybe. He was under everybody. I mean, his leverage was so good. And one of his teammates, Toy Cook, who I played with at Stanford, told me that he would accidentally blow people up in practice. You know, he's like, oh, man, I'm sorry. I just, you know, just rolled my hips a little bit there. I mean, he was just under everybody. His leverage, it's so key. How do you block him? And he's got good feet, and he can motor. So, yeah, he could be one of those guys that ends up being a big free agent star, you know, in the league. And but, yeah, it's kind of a lot to put on a kid who's an undrafted free agent and rookie. So, but we'll see. I think, you know, they've got him. They got this meter kid from Cleveland who's really a good run stuffer. And I think Jaren Reed is as good against the run as he is against the pass, if not maybe better. And he got, what, 10.5 sacks, 10 sacks. So, yeah, I would think that you get a couple of defensive ends, maybe one in the draft, maybe one in free agency that can turn out to be like a Cliff Averill. That's tall order. But then, you know, then you're going to sit there and count on three guys. Well, four, really. Nas Jones really needs to take a step, and maybe they move him out there to that five technique, and he is able to really come on. And then, you know, of course, Puna. And then Jacob Martin and Rasheem Green. I really liked Rasheem Green in the preseason. That's why when the season started, he was my pick to be. I thought he'd be the rookie that made the biggest impact. He got hurt a little bit, but he didn't quite develop like I thought he would. But, yeah, I really like what he does with his feet and his hands. I think he's really a good technical player.
Frank Clark led the team with 13 sacks this year. I know some people have said it was 14, but one of them was recategorized. He had 13 sacks. Jaren Reed was number two with 10.5. The number three guy in sacks next year, their number three pass rusher. Is it more likely that he's on the roster right now, so he's one of those four guys you just mentioned, or it's somebody they either get in draft or free agency?
I sure hope so. I hope it's one of these guys because I love this rookie class, and Pete can't talk enough about him. So, you know, I think the way Jacob Martin has developed and the way watching him learn and everything, I feel like it's going to be Jacob Martin.
It's Danny Davenport. We got a little bit more to get through when it comes to Paxton Lynch and why this might be the spot for him to bounce back. We also might throw a few more hockey terms your way from Snoop D-O-double-G. That's next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. I forgot to ask Jim what he thinks about Jimmy Lake's candidacy as Alabama defensive coordinator.
So what happened? Tosh Lapoy, the guy that stole Shaq Thompson from Cal when he came to Seattle and joined Sark, he left Alabama to go to Cleveland to be the defensive coordinator for the Browns.
Correct. He's not the defensive coordinator. He's coaching the defensive line.
Okay, and so they need a new defensive
coordinator
at Alabama. So Jimmy Lake is the top candidate?
Maybe. They're interested in him. Tosh Lapoy was their big recruiter.
I think he should go.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I think he should take it.
The reason being?
He'd be able to shut down Auburn every single year, I'm sure.
Well, I would think that the bigger factor for you would be that the guy who can shut down the Cougs passing game would be leaving the conference.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that, too. And I'd like him.
Don't you want to show Jimmy Lake who's boss? Don't you want to rise up and see him and send him on his way packing rather than.
One of the things that's going to happen is that Alabama is going to overpay him. And so he'll take the money and run. He'll go. He'll go to Alabama, and he'll want to prove that Jimmy Lake will know how to shut down those SEC offenses too.
You just assume Jimmy Lake thinks about himself in the third person?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Somebody... Jimmy likes Alabama. Jimmy likes his chicken spicy.
Yeah, he does do that. The Seahawks have a new backup quarterback. That is Paxton Lynch. We talked to his agent, Lee Steinberg, one of the longest tenured agents, guy who's been in the game since representing Steve Young. He talked about why Seattle's the right fit for him.
Well, I think that the opportunity to learn behind Russell Wilson, we saw how that benefited Patrick Mahomes, for example, when he sat behind Alex Smith. But I think as a mentor, it's a particularly bright one, and in a sense, we're restarting Paxton's career.
Let me ask it this way, because I don't think any of us believe that Paxton Lynch, that this signing means Paxton Lynch is going to be their backup quarterback. What would be more important for you in a backup quarterback? Is it someone who helps Russell get ready or the guy who has the best on-field future? And I guess it's two different things, because I think you can look at that position as if Russell were to get injured, and he's been incredibly durable, who gives us the best chance to win the game? And in that case, you're buying an insurance policy, and you want it's not going to be the best. You're going to get the best candidate you can in that regard. The other way to look at it is, hey, this guy's a part of a position group. There's going to be two, maybe three quarterbacks if you have another young guy like you had Alex Magoo this last year, and the quarterback coach, somebody who has more experience, which I think was one of the reasons at different points that they've brought in, whether it was Brady Quinn or people like that, somebody who is going to help him. The kid that had played with the Rams before who came here, who's going to be a coach in the future. He beat the Seahawks in a game. He was their backup, not last year, but the year before.
Forgotten his
name,
too.
I can't remember.
I know,
man.
Yeah. He beat the Seahawks in a game,
he
right?
He did, and the one there were all the fake punts, the games that they had.
Davis.
Yes.
Austin Davis. Yeah. Yeah. Here's what I would say about that. I mean, what kind of guy? So I asked today Lee Steinberg, and I know a lot of people pan that question, but the reason why I asked what kind of guy is he is because that is a really small room. You know, you're in there with your linebackers. It's, you know, 6-7 of you. You got a coach, maybe an assistant coach, and, you know, same thing with offensive line. It's a big room. But, you know, when you have your quarterbacks in there, there's three of you and, you know, sometimes just two of you and the coach. And it's got to be a good fit, you know. And it makes me think that Paxton Lynch must be a pretty decent dude because, you know, they understand how important that is. You can't bring some guy in that's a total jerk. You know, and I always wonder about Trevon Boykin, you know, and what was going on, because I was always willing to give him a second chance, but then he went out and kind of screwed that up. So, but yeah, that's a tough sort of little dynamic there if you don't have the right people in there. So I think what's most important is that that he's able to get Russell ready, and that's a gamble because I'm saying I don't think that Russell's going to get hurt. And, you know, he has been amazing in that regard. I'm almost like, I don't even worry about it anymore. Do you guys worry about Russell? There was one time in the Minnesota game, because I thought, what would this year look like about halfway through if Russell broke his leg or something like that? I mean, what would it look like? Who knows what you're going to get from Brett Hundley? They still would have been able to run the ball, but come on, man. He wins 3-4 games for him every year, and I don't know what's going to happen when that ever happens, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to.
Was the Minnesota game the one where he laid on the ground for a second?
He did. He got hit right in the chest, and I thought maybe you know, it was like a solar plexus thing or something, and he got the wind knocked at him, but just think about the last time you saw him lay on the ground.
Yeah, that was one of the only times I've seen him stay down, because when he hurt his knee, that was obviously the most serious.
Yeah.
That he was up and hopping around almost right away, mm-hmm. because he wasn't staying down.
Well, it's just as he gets older, and so he hasn't missed a game in his entire career, and now he's entering his 30s. It's kind of crazy to think that he's not going to miss a game at some point. So as much as I'm excited about, I mean, the biggest need is kicker, but that second-string quarterback on this team, the backup quarterback, it's a really important position. I don't think Paxton Lynch is necessarily that guy. Based on what happened today, you don't sit here and go, yeah, Paxton Lynch is going to be the backup quarterback. I still think that they're going to bring in somebody else to compete with him because the track record for Lynch was not good enough in Denver to expect him to be the backup quarterback because of what happened today. I don't want to go into another season, though. You want to have a backup that can somehow get you to 9 or 10 wins, and it helps having the run-first offense, though.
Yeah, it does. 9 or 10 wins with the backup might be tough. I think you hope for 500. If a guy can win 2 of 4 games for you, that's a really good backup. We've also looked today for familiarize ourselves with some of the hockey slang thanks to an unlikely source, Snoop Dogg.
Get out your dictionaries because today, the professor of pucks, Dog Cherry, a.k.a. the greater one, is teaching you hockey words at Hockey 101, the hockey slang edition.
Do we know the backstory
of Snoop Dogg being involved with that?
Yeah.
I think they thought it'd be funny to have Snoop Dogg give hockey analysis.
So somebody was saying that he called a game live.
Well, we had his call in Sweeping the Dial where it was a fight. He was talking to like, let's get it.
But he did the entire game?
He joined a booth.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but as a guest announcer, but yeah, they gave way and allowed him to announce the fight.
Which is pretty funny. And I'd listen to Snoop Dogg read the dictionary. Like, if we're being honest, I love the sound of his voice. Here is the first term, chiclets.
I got it.
What are chiclets?
Teeth.
Chiclets are teeth. This guy does not have many chiclets and needs to get himself a dentist.
Very good, Dave. I don't think I would have gotten that.
Well,
because I was just thinking about the gum.
Yeah.
Way back.
You don't get a dentist until your career's over.
How about flow? What do you think a hockey flow is?
Flow? Like a play? A set play?
Okay, set play. Hockey flow.
New line coming in.
Power play.
A power play is Jessamine's guess. It can also be referred to as salad. It is hair.
In hockey, flow has nothing to do with rhyming. It's about wild hair. Like this guy's great flow.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going to be looking at their hair?
Yeah, that's going to be it.
I think Snoop Dogg just threw that one in there himself.
It's possible. It's possible. We also had one. Let's get you through a couple others that we had previously defined. An apple?
An apple is an assist. Like your man Claude Giroux. He has mad apples.
I also liked pipes.
Pipes are the goalposts. I'll use it in a sentence. That guy hit the pipe.
And finally, my absolute favorite is the five hole.
The five hole is the space between the goalie's leg. Going five hole sounds dirty, but it just means scoring in the most humiliating way possible. In between the legs.
It's Danny David Moore. We're going to find out what we've learned. We'll do that next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we've learned. We'll have the professor coming up here in top of the hour. But first, a summary of today's lessons.
Yeah, we learned a lot.
What did we learn?
We started off learning that Jim has suspicions about PED users in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm starting to agree with you. You know, there for a while I was thinking, those guys cheated. You can't let them in. But there's already guys who are cheaters who are in there, and you don't know who they are exactly. So I think they should just open it up
to
everybody.
Who are they?
I don't know.
Oh, well, then they're not.
Well, I know that there are cheaters.
How do you know?
I don't.
Just said you knew. Now you say you don't know.
Well, I just have a sneaking suspicion that there are several in there that shouldn't be in there. But I can't prove it.
Because they what?
There's nothing I can prove.
They took steroids?
I believe that they did.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm not so sure about that. I didn't know how to respond to that.
You didn't really say anything there.
There's a bunch of cheaters in the Hall of Fame. I'm just making, it's just my opinion.
That was a sentence about nothing.
Yeah.
You know how Seinfeld was a show about nothing? That was a sentence and an accusation about nothing.
If you don't get caught cheating, did you cheat?
Yeah, it's pass fail. Did you pass? Did those guys get caught?
Those guys.
The end.
Those guys. Wait. Those guys did not get caught.
The end.
But I think there's some people somewhere that are going, man, can you believe I got in the Hall of Fame? I'm sure glad I didn't get caught like Bonds did.
But
it's
if you,
just.
But if
why?
You,
it's just a cynic in me, Dave. You know me.
I know, but sometimes I think people think that being cynical makes them really smart. And I'm not saying that's the case with you, but like anybody that just believes everything is just so naive and stupid. And I'm the guy that thinks just a little bit deeper than everybody else. And I'm like,
no,
when
I'm being cynical, that never occurs to me to think that I'm being smarter than anybody else. I'm just, when I look at the Hall of Fame, I think it would be naive to think that there aren't guys in there that did it.
Hmm.
You know, I feel like not that I'm defending.
That's well said. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's well said. Yes. Now I guess I understand it a little bit better.
When people think of steroids, I think that also, and like I said, I'm not excusing the use of them, but they think it's like Popeye eating spinach. The guys that use them and work, you have to work extremely, extremely hard, and steroids play a very small part in the majority of people who have used them. And, you know, I know that when you said, oh, you think these guys are looking back and saying, can you believe I got in the Hall of Fame? I don't think anyone would look back at their career and what they accomplished and say that. I think they'd say, you're gosh darn right, I earned it. And I don't know. That's just my opinion on it. I don't think that steroids help people as much as they think they do.
I'm with you, Jess. I think that's a great, well said. The Popeye with spinach thing. I think that's what everybody thinks. Remember, sometimes he'd suck it in through his pipe.
Why would you take steroids if you didn't feel like it was going to help you?
Well, the majority of them, it's recovery. The majority of people who take PEDs nowadays is because it aids in recovery. It's not what you had your Mark McGwire and your Barry Bonds. Those are really the two examples of steroid use in baseball. And they're these gigantic guys who mashed a ton of home runs. And so that's what everybody thinks steroids is.
Can I allow... Mm. The poet laureate, Most Deaf, to chime in on steroids.
Please.
Listen, if you intend to throw a small ball at past 90 or 100 miles an hour, and you told me you took a special solution to do it, okay. You want to hit a ball, you want to run faster than most humans can run, and you tell me you took some special juice or liquid or a shot? Come on, man. People run around here with appendages they wasn't born with. Fake noses. You tell me you... Yes. I expect my sports heroes to take steroids. Because the shit that they're trying to do is hard.
Never ceases to amuse me.
We also learned about Pac-12 coaches in Arizona.
C-Rod will tell you you can't trust Arizona State because they're coached by a psychopath.
Why is Bobby Hurley a psychopath?
He's just so unhinged.
Yeah, that's great.
Not if you're an ASU fan.
This is coming from a guy that used to root for a team that had Stoops on your sideline.
Fair point. And Rich Rod.
Oh my God. I forget which Stoops it was, but he was angry all the time.
Yeah, but he well never versed in psychos.
C-Rod's got his PhD in psychos.
I know. People don't like Bobby Hurley because he was on the Duke team with Christian Leitner and all that. Am I right? It goes back to that.
He's a tryhard.
I like Hurley. I like him too. He's one of the more likable guys, but I don't like him as a coach. I think he's a freak show as a coach.
I always kind of feel a little bit bad for him thinking about what happened.
It was an awful
during
car
his playing
accident.
Career right. Outside yeah. of Arco Arena there in Sacramento.
Yeah.
So every time I see him doing one of his tirade things, I kind of think of that.
You give him, cut him some slack because he was once in a near-death accident.
Yeah. Yep.
Finally, today we learned that Wyman wants answers from Adam Gase.
Did nobody ask why he did that?
Nobody asked him during the press conference, why does it look like you have hostage eyes?
No,
did
no.
Did he joke around at all?
I mean from Le Batard.
Yeah.
Dan Le Batard, that's on his radio show. Did he not ask him? Why were your eyes so googly?
I don't know if he said
what happened at the press conference and then went on and said, and have you seen all of these things?
Yeah.
And so he really didn't address what happened to make his eyes go googly.
Yeah, that'd be the only question. I mean, he totally missed on that. The question would be, what in the world Do you, I mean, can you do that again? Do you do that all the time? Does it freak your wife out?
I agree.
Dave, that was, you could do an entire course to radio station interview hosts about these are the way to ask these questions. Because that was, as soon as you said that, I was like, that's exactly what I would want to hear the answer to. Can you do that again? Can you do it now?
Can you do it at will? Or does something have to happen?
Does your wife freak out when you do it to her?
I like how Jessman made it so clinical. What made your eyes go googly? That was the clinical term that we use.
Why did you have googly eyes?
But you think it's a nervous tic and he doesn't even know it's happening?
No, I think he got hopped up on some sugar and snorted some pixie sticks or something and went into there. Yeah, I absolutely think that was something there. This hour brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. That's going to do it for us this afternoon. We always love having John Clayton on the show. Special guest appearance by Snoop Dogg, although I don't think he knew he was involved in our show today, but we appreciate him nonetheless. We want to thank Lee Steinberg as well. Jessamyn McIntyre is our producer. Curtis Rogers is on the board. For the three of us, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3. Cougar Hoops coming up next.